I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is The Counter-Ruck, a rugby podcast brought to you by the Irish Times in association with Nifty Business. My name is Nathan Johns. Today is the Monday after the Saturday. Ireland have beaten Wales 31-7 with another bonus point victory. They are 3 from 3 in the Six Nations this year. A bonus point win at Twickenham in just under a fortnight's time leaves them as Six Nations champions with one game to go. Joining me today to look back at the win that was on Saturday is former Ireland international and current Irish Times rugby columnist Gordon Darcy and our rugby correspondent Gerry Thornley. Gerry, I won't start by asking about the atmosphere last week.
No.
I'll ask you for it.
That was a bad Monday. We started off with that question and went back and my car was clamped.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
That's why it was clamped. Because if I didn't ask you that question, it wouldn't
have been
clamped.
Wasn't working. I put a note in the windowsill, came back and the car was still clamped.
What was the note? I'm Gerry
Machine
Thornley.
Out of order.
This is Gerry
no,
Thornley's
machine
car.
Machine out of order, not accepting card. Tried 3 times. Put the date and time and everything. Didn't put my name on it, Darcy. No.
You need to have the. That's what you should have done. You need to have the old Trevor Brennan clout in around town. I'm surprised you don't have it. We went down. We met Trevor years ago when he was still before he got banned. Went down to meet him for a coffee, and he pulls up in the car, just dumps the car up on the footpath, and we're like, "Trevor, what are you doing?" He goes, "It's okay." And we were walking back afterwards, and his jersey, he has the number 6 pulled over the seat, so all the coppers know that it's his car.
This is down in Toulouse, is it?
Yeah. Oh. The king of Toulouse.
I'd say he wouldn't be the only one who can pull that trick playing for Toulouse.
Yeah, fair enough.
It'd be interesting to see if his sons are like that now. Josh Brennan is still down there in Toulouse. That aside, well, hopefully you don't get clamped today, Gerry.
Hopefully. Well, that's why I brought the bike.
Very clever. Very clever. We are roughly 48 hours out from Ireland beating Wales, 31-7. 3 wins from 3. Grand Slam is still on. Myself and Doris were actually just talking before we came on air. The way the table is at the minute, a bonus point victory in Twickenham in 2 weeks' time seals the title.
Yes.
It's not very often you have a team sealing the title with one game to go. Obviously, that is a lot of if, buts and maybes and a lot of water under the bridge before then. But where did you see Saturday? Generally positive, probably the most flawed display of this tournament so far?
I don't know about that. Maybe was it the most flawed? Well, certainly the French performance was excellent all around. Did you go to Velodrome? A win by 5-2. Italy, it wasn't far removed from Italy. Maybe a little bit less convincing than that. But then again, I thought Wales put up a much better resistance than the Italians did. In fact, Wales kind of kept their spacings really well, didn't get outflanked much. Their tackle execution was good. Even the try Ireland scored. It took whatever 15 phases to break them down in that first half. The first half was like a training session. It felt like the Welsh had been wearing bibs. It was attack against defence. And for them to keep the score to what they did was actually something of an achievement. To come back in the third quarter the way they did. I'm looking at the clock after about 55 minutes and going, Wales are on the attack here. It's 17-7. I went, no, surely not. No, surely not. But an Ireland are down to 14 men. You're thinking, God, this Six Nations, really, you know, we should never forget its capacity for surprise. But then, of course, Ty Byrne comes back on, makes that muscular steal. Roland Keller makes that jackal penalty. And then once he makes that bust, you knew, yeah, it's all okay again.
Warren Gatland-Darce, after the game, said in that first half, we felt Ireland didn't trouble us with their attack. The general phrase, but he made the point that they just were obliterated at the scrum and Ireland just kept managing to kick penalty after penalty into the 22.
and eventually a more try kind of inched its way over. And it has to be said, the Welshman was actually quite good. They did repel Ireland initially, and then they got a more try of their own later on. Is that fair? I thought there was a little bit, not disingenuous, but I thought maybe rose-tinted glasses there from Gatland. Because you do remember, Ireland's offloading game, when it didn't lead to errors, was pretty good in that first half.
Yeah, like I'd say, so Gatland set out a stall and typically bullish, you know, announced the team on Tuesday. Was like, oh yeah, we got a plan to disrupt and to hassle Ireland. And they did, to some degree. And he would probably be sitting there afterwards going, you know, and I think he said as well, the scoreline didn't reflect the game. And it depends on which changing room you're in.
Well, it's funny because Andy Farrell, that was put to Andy Farrell afterwards. So Andy Farrell went after Gatland and someone said, Warren Gatland said the scoreline didn't reflect it. And Farrell said, yeah, well, we should have scored 50. So that's your point.
And that is the crux of it. Like if you're in a Welsh team, you're going, as Jerry said there, it was like night and day attack defence. Ireland had 73% possession in the first half. Like every time Wales got the ball, like they literally just dropped it. They didn't get over. They didn't get a multi-phase until the first 3 minutes of the second half. So they were just giving up territory. They were giving up possession. They were just staying in every defensive set to try and just stop Ireland from scoring. And they did that largely to it. But I think what it does, one of the things you have to accept in the modern game is the way it's ref now, because you can get quick ball and you can get over the game line. You have to be proficient in attack. And their try came from a penalty maul, not actually getting over the line. And, you know, while their defensive maul was solid, you know, they were bailing water for me for most of that game.
As for Wales, Jerry, it's strange to say after they lose by, 24 points, but there seems to be a lot of positivity surrounding them, given that I think people were expecting a lot worse. Like, you look at some of the displays that happened. Ireland did a good job of keeping someone like Tommy Rafael quiet. But you look at someone like Cameron Winnett. I thought he was fantastic, especially in that middle period when Ireland were down to 14 and he was running back kicks and being a threat. Daffod Jenkins, I thought, had a couple of good involvements, especially in that maul area. Alex Mann, Aaron Wainwright, that back row looks to be quite solid. I mean, if they can get someone like a Joe Hawkins back, a ball-carrying 12, and sort out their front row, 2-3 years, this is a Welsh side that looks like it can compete.
Could be competitive, but you still don't think it'll have anything like the golden generation that won 3 Grand Slams for Gatland, the Alan Wynne-Joneses, George North at his peak, and out half like Dan Bigger, and, you know, the list got Justin Tipperidge, wonderful world-class player. Will it have that collection of players, goal-kickers like Lee Halfpenny, centres like Foxy Davis, that, wow. When you look back in it, the team that the last hurrah that won the Grand Slam in 2021 or 2, whatever it was.
2019.
That team. 19.
Yeah, it was the year before. Remember, there was the Gareth Anscombe game in Cardiff.
They won the title in the pandemic, though. Do you remember behind closed doors?
When, what's his name's full year, first year?
That was the last hurrah
of that generation. And Gatland, I did the stats on this. He's used 65 players in his first 15 games. And with the best win in the world, the Welsh don't have 65 international players. I'm not even sure New Zealand is 65 or South Africa is 65, but certainly Wales don't at the moment. And he's been fishing around and he got a cobbled together a good team for the World Cup that won all their pool games, thrashed Australia, beat Fiji. I was at it. It was they didn't get enough credit for that. They actually did beat a very, very good Fijian side, topped their pool, and should have beaten Argentina, but then lost away and fell away badly. And now he's had to do a complete rebuild again. And I thought they're very spirited. They're quite fit, with one or two exceptions. And they hunt in very well, but their attack is limited. There's no doubt their attack is limited. And you saw that against England. Have they gone? It's 3 halves of the Six Nations out of 6 where they haven't registered a solitary point.
Yeah, but I think it's, as I was saying, it's a stereotypical Gatland performance in that circle the wagons, we get everybody in, we play for each other, we really, really close in the ranks, and you kind of dip into that emotional performance. It only gets you so far.
But what else can he do, Darius, given where the four regions are?
But
it's extraordinary.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. But you're getting that from them now. They do need to get a win. They do need to get something over the line for these players to go, listen, the squeeze has been worth it. All of this effort, all of these, because they're leaving there. You definitely cannot fault the effort of what they're doing there.
No, definitely not.
But they do need to get a result for Gatland's voice to stay prominent and to keep landing the same message. Because
for sure.
Some point, then you're kind of going, these guys lose to France and lose to Italy, And you kind of go on.
That would be one win in 13, something like that.
Yeah, but then it's the hard then when you're as a that's player hard. In
for
that
Wales
changing room.
Yeah, and Wales as a nation.
Yeah, but when you're in that changing room and you're going, you're telling, you know, we believed we bought in, but ultimately we haven't done it. So, and I think the just to draw on what you were saying there as well, that probably missing one or two or three, like that sprinkling of star quality. I'm not sure either of the tens are good enough.
Well, I think it's worth highlighting. What is it? Is it the 60 cap rule? We were talking about this on with Mike Bubbins the other day. I believe it's 60 caps if you don't play in the region.
I think it's only 25 caps.
Oh, is it 25? They brought it down. But you need to have more than a certain number of caps if you play outside of Wales, if it's not your first contract, if it's not your first professional contract. So that's why someone like Dafydd Jenkins, who plays for Exeter, he's only 21. He can come back and play for Wales. But it's why Joe Hawkins can't, because he plays for Exeter as well, but that's his second professional contract. It's why Rhys Samet can play, I think. Well, no, he has more caps now. He's enough caps. He's obviously gone. We'll see whether he makes it.
He's also playing a different sport.
Well, that's the thing. Whether he might. Well,
that's my problem.
Well, yes, we'll see if he makes it in the gridiron. I'm sure a number of Welsh fans are hoping that he doesn't get signed.
There's a couple in Japan, isn't there? Joe Hawkins, Liam Williams is in Japan, isn't he, as well?
Yeah, Lee Halfpenny's down in the Crusaders, although he's injured. He got injured playing against Munster.
They have
a
prop playing in France, they're not picking as well. A good prop.
Well, they could do with a prop. I mean, it's not very often you see Ireland getting scrum dominance to the extent that they did in that first half.
Yeah, I know. And this has been a problem for the Welsh throughout this tournament. And they're like, I think he's used something like 11 props in those 16 games as well. And certainly the Welsh don't have 11 props. And, you know, there was a bit of a puzzlement in Wales as to why he just was ignoring Dylan Lewis. But we can discuss later. When Dylan Lewis came on, he immediately locked the scrum and all that. Gaddy, why aren't you picking Dylan Lewis? This was his first appearance at Six Nations and it needed quite a number of injuries for him to go to Dylan Lewis in the second half of the game. And he did lock the first couple of scrums and then you see him in open play.
Yes.
And you go, right, now I get why he's not being picked, because he's just not of the requisite fitness levels and mobility that Gatlin would want from his players.
We were talking about this before we started recording. There is a video doing the rounds on Twitter. I think Rian Lowe is the name of the guy who shared it, and it is quite funny. It's worth finding if you can. To tee it up, Darce, you said typical Gatlin performance. One of the areas that was typical was they didn't compete at the breakdown. They let Ireland have the ball and said, we're going to have 14 men in the line and make you go through and around us. Look, that's all well and good. It worked to an extent in that first half, but the problem is you're making tackle after tackle and giving Ireland quick ball, and that's a real issue. When we saw poor old Dylan Lewis has to make two or three tackles in the space of 30 seconds, and then he has to try and tackle Tadhg Byrne at the end, and he falls over and Byrne scores. So it's all well and good not competing and letting Ireland have the ball, but do you have the fitness levels, or just do you have the cattle to be able to do that for extended periods?
Yeah, and it's hard, and it's a tactical decision that you make. As he said, the set out was they wouldn't put numbers in the breakdown. So for everyone listening, well, that the knock-on effect of that, what that means is you will have the tackler, Ireland will have to have two or three people in the ruck plus the scrum half. So they have four people off their feet, and where Wales will only have one. And the, I suppose the rationale then is you have numbers spare in defence, so you can actually try and get up in the face of the Irish attack, which they did for large parts of the game, and frustrated Ireland more or less repeatedly. But with a player like Jemsa Gibson-Park, who is so skilled at moving the ball away from the breakdown, moving the point of contact so to so many different areas, while Wales's defensive system was doing what it was supposed to be doing, they were running and chasing shadows for large parts of the thing. And then eventually the tack. That will work when you get 50-50 possession. But Ireland had, I think, about 65% possession maybe across the whole game.
56% it said at the end. But that, given that the whole third quarter was spent in the Irish 22, that's kind of remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, bear in mind, for the first half, it was 70-30.
So the damage is done at various...
last quarter as well, you know what I mean? Yeah.
At various points in that.
Right, we're talking about the Welsh bench faltering slightly, Jerry. A complete opposite for the Irish bench. Yeah. It is actually all of a sudden, without any of us really noticing until yesterday, the power that they can bring off the bench. Kelleher at hooker, even the fact they're picking Jaeger, what's he, 6'4"? Massive tight head to come off. James Ryan, it doesn't get a lot of credit, I think. People might look at the yellow card. People might look at the yellow card.
Harsh yellow. It's not his
yellow.
It's a team
yellow. It's a team yellow. Yeah. But equally, I thought that defensive set you were mentioning earlier, he was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Ryan Bear, prepared look. He's got the trademark busts up the middle these days. And even Jack Conan, I thought he was quietly excellent as well. Those are four or five incredibly powerful options to bring off the bench. And it's not really something we've had before in Irish rugby to that extent.
I don't think there's ever been a more powerful, impactful bench than this one in terms of just high tackle count, high energy and high physicality. And also, they steered the ship home in many ways just through the direct carrying of Kelleher and Baird and Conan particularly. I mean, but they also gave huge energy to the defence. The stats are remarkable. All six of the forwards that came on, even though they played for between 8 minutes or 30 minutes, every single one of them is in double figures for tackles. It's extraordinary. Conan, 14 in 30 minutes. Kelleher, 13 in 26 minutes. And Healy, who had a very impactful game for holding that try over the line by Rainwright, Jaeger, Ryan, Baird, all 11 tackles each, plus the carries they were making, line breaks, busts and everything else. So it was almost bomb squad-ish, you know. It vindicated the 6-2 split. And it's very interesting where they go in the future with this, because it worked in the Stade Velodrome as well, didn't it? It's a gamble, but
we would have had equally as big packs down through the years.
Interesting. Okay, go on.
So, like, when
we would never have had six impactful forwards on the bench, though.
I'm not sure that's. I think there was plenty of competition when you look at, say.
No, I know that.
No, but I'm just. Hang on.
Yeah.
let me get there.
Never pick six people.
I know. Let me get there. There has been other periods where we would have had a similar profile to what we have now. I think one of the key differences, we have a coach that's willing to embrace it. And not in a, oh, we're playing South Africa and we might get beaten up here, so I'm going to go with a 6-2 split. He's actually going, this is a weapon for us to actually impose ourselves on other teams. And I think that's a key difference with Andy Farrell. I don't think Kidney, I don't think Eddie O'Sullivan, I don't think Joe would have ever thought along those lines. So I think that's a mindset shift from these guys. And
definitely.
I think it's to be applauded.
There was before Velodrome, Ireland had never gone for 6-2 split.
They didn't do it against South Africa at that time in the World Cup. Exactly, South Africa picked 7 forwards that day.
Yeah, and Ireland have never gone for 6 before. So I don't know, Darcy, do you think, like, if they went 5-3 in Twickenham, Ryan Baird or Jack Cohn or James Ryan misses out?
I don't think,
which is extraordinary.
I don't think they can do that. I think they keep,
I think it's also an
so
element
well.
Of playing to your strengths, isn't it? This is what Ireland have at the moment. But there is a gamble therein if you get an injury early on in the back line.
Like, it is, but like, you're also setting, you know, like, games are won up front. Like, you look at how different that, if Wales had a tight had five impactful forwards to come on, you know, we're into the realms of what ifs and things like that. But that would have, in the way the game had unfolded, five forwards come on and genuinely impact that. That has a material impact potentially on the outcome. I think when you go into Twickenham, you win away from home. Stats are very, you know, brutal, like, with the home team, 75%. You know, in favour of teams that are playing at home. So Ireland go there with a 6-2 split, and you get an injury in the backs. Yeah, it disrupts your attack a bit. It all depends on, say, if it's Stu McCluskey, for argument's sake, how he fits in. And but the looks of where he can't be fitted in at the weekend.
Wing.
Yeah, he looked fine.
You'd wonder who'd go full back if Frawley got injured.
Crowley. But then who goes 10? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's an interesting one. I think Well, obviously, a lot of that depends on if Hugo Keenan is fit to start at Twickenham or not.
Of course.
But sorry, I did McCluskey a disservice by not mentioning him in that kind of powerful bench impact. He had that. He set up the Byrne try with his big hit on Mason Grady, and then the counter ruck that led to a penalty. Ireland kicked to the corner. Byrne scores after running poor old
Conor Murray pulled the strings very well in it all.
Sorry,
as well,
the one thing I just wanted to say on the 6-2 split. So how we've ended up in this place has come in from Joe McCarthy. So his 6 months ago, he was a clear talent, but just wasn't ready for international at the top end. And I know full too well how much six months can make in a player's career. The difference between him now and August last year is massive. He has just added now, and he has leaped over James Ryan in the selection. So he's gone in there. But what that gives now is options. Right across the back row, this option opens up the 6-2 split, because you have all of these, you have the option of the power game. You can keep McCarthy and James Ryan. If you need scrummaging in the last 20 minutes, you can interchange them there to keep Tadhg Byrne on the field. You can now look at Tadhg Byrne and options in the back row if you want to bring them in. It just opens up so many options. And, that's what a player like McCarthy gives you.
And also, in fairness to Farrell, like, he's so adept at spotting. He's got an eye for a player and how he's going to fit into the Irish team that's almost quicker than the provinces. Be it James Gibson Park, like, Gibson Park was number two to Luke McGrath when he's brought into the Irish squad. And he had Joe McCarthy on the development tour 2 years ago nearly. And he would have been in the Six Nations squad last year, but for injury. And he's very good at doing this. Like, Calvin Nash has been in the Emerging Ireland Tour, Jack Crowley Emerging Ireland Tour, Joe McCarthy Emerging Ireland Tour and New Zealand Tour. Like, as he said last week, they may be new to you people, but they're not new to us. So all these players are serving their apprenticeship in the squad. So when they come in, they're ready. Ireland have had four full Six Nations debutants in the first three rounds, but you wouldn't have thought it. They've all slipped in seamlessly. Whereas by comparison, Gatland's throwing in players, you know, that haven't, like, their out halves have not done time with somebody like Dan Biggar. Whereas Jack Crowley has served an apprenticeship of 18 months with Johnny Sexton. He's very astute, a clever coach. He really
well,
is.
Well, it's worth highlighting. McCarthy was in an Ireland squad even before the Emerging Ireland. He was called up midway through the 2022 Six Nations. So that was the year they won the Triple Crown. He was in that squad, I think.
I think Leinster were a bit unlucky because he got injured for so much of last season. We'll never know how their season might have panned out otherwise. But I think he would have been in the Six. Didn't he miss the whole of Six Nations last year with an injury? He had an injury for the Six
but
Nations.
The point of just to labour with someone like McCarthy is that maturity that has come over that experience of the World Cup. Again, probably spending time with players, with Paul O'Connell. Yeah. But there's a maturity to his performances now that wasn't there 12 months
ago.
Just
gives away a couple of penalties, but you don't want to take that edge away from him. You know, the one in the air was a little bit harsh. The counter ruck, I think, was fair enough. That was a penalty. But that footwork for the try, it's just extraordinary. And the other thing about us, Darcy, you know this better than I do. When you bring in a young, almost firebrand like Joe McCarthy, who's almost like a wrecking ball and is kind of plays with a certain youthful freedom as well as quality, isn't it very galvanising for everybody else around him as well? Like, look at Tadhg Byrne's two performances in the Velodrome and last Saturday. I mean, he's been outstanding. And is that an element of a 30-year-old going, whoa, look at this kid? There's an element of that, isn't there? It freshens up a team when a new player comes in. You probably had that effect once yourself in the Irish team.
Possibly. It might be a bit generous. But yeah, no, it does. What it frees up players to do is to do something else. Like when he carried, as you point in case, when he had that big carry and the lead up to the try, it frees up other players to do other roles.
So it adds five Welsh defenders. Took five Welsh defenders out of the defensive system.
Adds a new dimension to players, because suddenly if you don't have to like that, so that by that carry, it's super quick ball. As you're saying, Two players immediately tackling him, one player in behind. Everybody looking in at the ruck. As they're looking in at the ruck, Gibson Park has the ball shipped away from it. So that's an added dimension that he gives.
Wales played into that though by gifting him the quick ruck speed by not competing, which is ties us nicely back to the point we were making earlier. Right, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, myself, Jerry and Gordon are going to discuss England's defeat to Scotland on the weekend and what that means for Ireland's trip to Twickenham in a few weeks' time.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yeah, it's certainly different. It's obviously something that we know is the South African defence, and
I know that Felix will constantly try to put his stamp on implementing that, you know, so there's always going to be teething problems at the start. They'll go harder, there's no doubt about that, because that's the philosophy. So it's something that we've come up against before, and we all know that. Our lads are coached by the coach that made it up in the first place, you know, so...
Welcome back to the Counter Rock. My name is Nathan Johns. You just heard from Andy Farrell there, who was speaking on Saturday evening after Ireland's victory, talking about England's famed new blitz defence and the challenges that it's going to face when Ireland go to Twickenham on March the 9th. Before we get on to England itself, though, and obviously the Felix Jones, South African-style defence, Jerry, it's a very interesting comment that by Farrell, with kind of almost like a throwaway at the end when he said, oh yeah, our lads are coached by the lad who invented the blitz defence, so we should be well prepared to deal with it, was the inference, I think, or the implication. You wrote in today's Irish Times that Andy Farrell was wistfully referring to himself. I think at the same press conference, I might have actually offended Mr. Farrell by following up and saying, well, do you mean Jack Nienaber at Leinster, considering most of the team is coached by him these days? And he gave me a funny look. Who invented this blitz defence? Who can Ireland thank?
Well, I think he was talking about himself, given that he's been in the Irish setup for 8 years. Like, we've got to remember that he did a near 4-year stint as defence coach.
But did he invent a blitz defence?
I don't know if he invented the blitz defence per se, but that's who I figured he was talking about. I doubt very much he's attributing Ireland's defence to Jack Nienaber.
No, not their defence, rather, but that their innocence. There's enough.
I think there's a little bit of an influence, all right, from Nienaber. Yeah. I think you can see that in the way that Caelan Doris and Joe McCarthy counter ruck more than they used to do. It's very much a Springbok trait. You look at all those vids on YouTube, and we want to FUC asterisk them up. It's a common thing they say in their team huddles, and they go after opposition mauls and rucks. It's a very Springbok thing to basically give you nothing, give the opposition team absolutely nothing for free. Not a scrum, not a ruck, not a maul, nothing. Just constant. And there's an element of that creeping into maybe a little bit of Leinster and Ireland. But I think he would take great offence that this is not this is very much an Irish defence that goes back a long way now. I mean, those stats on the last 13 games, 13 tries conceded. When everybody else is double figures or more, it's quite extraordinary.
It's an incredible
record. I mean, it was very interesting when I spoke to him in the Monday huddle after. I said, look, you're always saying we want improvements for next week. What was good about today? Well, like, what was a box ticked? And the first thing he said, our defence is top drawer. There's no doubt about that. And it's very rare that Andy would pat his own team on the back to that extent. And I went back looking at it, and those, like, Darcy is right, the Wales weren't going very far early on, but there were still there was a couple of really good jackals by Bundiaki and Andrew Porter, which stymied them. Then they came knocking before half time. Josh van der Fleer put in a big, big hit, and I think it was Nip Tompkins, and then Caelan Doris, big hit, and George North. And ultimately, they conceded one questionable try to a line at Maul, and that was their first score conceded in 150 minutes. And the previous one, if you remember back to the Velodrome, was a very questionable Maul try as well.
Darcy, based on what you saw from England, who were just after Ireland on Saturday, will they pose more questions to Ireland's impressive defence?
Portix is in a very tricky position now. Asked for the reins, had obviously clear vision of what he was going to do and what he's going to bring. He's had over 12 months in the role now, and it's hard to see much improvement in England. So I think that loss in Scotland has set them back considerably. The one thing England have is they do have quality. For me, I think they're badly organised or badly set up at the moment.
That's the thing. They seem to be caught between two ways of playing. I mean, their first try was a brilliant backline strike. One you didn't see from them in the World Cup at all, by the way. They didn't do anything like that. No. And they have. They've got the centres. You know, someone like Henry Slade, they didn't play Dingwall on the weekend, but he's a brilliant ball-playing centre. Ollie Lawrence, granted, he gives them that bust up the middle that they need. But I think in the press conference afterwards, Borthwick was really interesting. He said something along the lines of... Scotland's 10, 12, 13 played together for the 16th time today or something, whereas Ford, Lawrence, Slade, that was the first time, according to Borthwick, that they played together.
Like, give me a break. That is just absolute nonsense.
Channeling your inner Roy Keane there. Do me a favour.
A little bit. Like, you're just kind of, you're like, and this, I suppose that is the job, that's the gig. Like, you're deflecting away from, like, your own team's rather than dealing it like head on, but I suppose a bit of honesty in a press conference is going to be rare from coaches. It's like, oh no, it's not us, it's them. Look, you know, they've got lovely structures and everything. Like, you're at a, I'm going to be, hopefully this doesn't come back to bite me in the rear end. But if you're kind of going like, oh, well, the Scotland structure is more conducive to winning matches than the English one, you're kind of grasping at straws a little bit.
The point is that they're caught between two stools, I think. That they have the cattle, I think, to play and those first phase strikes, play
Ford
with
there.
Them attack. Ford is a good 10. Ford is actually probably their most adaptable 10 in terms of kicking game and running game. But then with 10 minutes to go, they're down by 9 points. Ben Spencer is taking 17 seconds at a breakdown to box kick the ball away.
It's astonishing. They're so programmed to this game.
They're 9 points
so,
down.
So programmed to this game. It's extraordinary. They're
this
really robotic.
This is the problem.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
are very badly coached and set up. So when we go over there, what you have now is you have a... two different philosophies coming head to head. You have what is a loosely structured heads up type approach from Ireland, still heavily structured, but we are looking to create high tempo rugby versus what England is, which is playing to percentages based off statistics. And unfortunately, they don't have a feel for the
There was
game.
A very good segment on the BBC highlights show yesterday with Johnny Barclay and Sam Warburton, and they were just showing they were freeze frames with Ford getting the ball off a line out and the receiver, next receiver in midfield, 10 yards behind him on the gate line. Like, and then they go eventually, they go out wide and they get all the way back up to near the gate line on the outside. But it's just, and their reaction from turnovers is almost non-existent. They don't seem to have an idea what to do off turnovers, which, in as we all know, is in the modern game can be gold dust. Like, even for a not particularly inventive French side, they can be superb off turnovers. Most sides can be, just slip into some kind of attacking mindset. Not this English team. The only thing I would say is, as we saw in the World Cup in all four quarterfinals and one of the semifinals, sometimes the more attack-minded team, the team that passes more, runs more, carries more, creates more, doesn't always win. And England at Twickenham might just look what they did last Paddy's Day in March against Ireland to Viva. They might just look for a one-off identity, go back to their kicking game, kick, 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 even more than ever, and truck it up and very little else and play their defence. And with a fired-up Twickenham, it could be a difficult afternoon, is all I'm saying.
You've written the script. Like, England have written their own script, and we're all too familiar with that. Just on the point where you're talking about the forward and then the next pass being so far back, that is players who are not, they are playing to a system and not overly confident in it. So your friend is depth. And big passes, it all looks good, but ultimately doesn't achieve much, as you said. So they've gone like three passes back, couple of big runs, and where do they get to? A ruck in the 5 meter channel, and it's at the same place where the ball was thrown into that line out. And, you know, if you've got defenses, one of the problems with Ford as your 10 is the more you get up in his face, the deeper he goes, the deeper he drops, and then your attack becomes completely stymied because you're going backwards to go around, and England don't really have the out and out pace that you would have.
The defense will probably get better in round 4. Like, defense is an easier fix, agreed, and
that's exactly what Wales did coming to here.
Exactly, and there will be a huge focus on Ireland in a 2 week build up to Ireland coming off a defeat, playing at home. Felix Jones winding up this defence even more than they've already done. There have been glitches in all three games. Off the top of my head, I can visualise Italy with an inside pass going and beating the blitz on the outside. I can remember that ball back inside to Tommy Reffa, linking with Alex Mann, also beating the blitz. I remember the Scotland also did that as well, didn't they, the weekend with the Hugh Jones break. So there are glitches in this system that I'm sure an Irish attack is clever enough, because it's such a clever team.
Ireland is set up,
expose.
And this brings us back to the Dylan Lewis point, where they didn't target him in the defensive line, but they did it. It's something Ireland do very well by attacking predominantly in the 15-meter channels. They're making two or three forwards on the opposition work really hard, and then eventually they find him in the line and attack him. That's what Wales did. The inside Reffel ball, it's because Will Stewart, the tight head prop, is not quick out of the line. So there's a dogleg bang, inside ball, you're in. Ireland are equipped to deal with that, I think, and to find those flaws and find those lazy forwards, lazy yeah. tight five forwards on the inside.
Like, and again, with the greatest respect to Wales that went through this, just where they are currently at the moment, I don't think that was the sharpest performance from Ireland, and I don't think they needed to be their sharpest performance for Ireland. And I think going to Twickenham will sharpen the mind.
Yeah.
I think, And that will that
and no
works.
Harm to Arsenal. They didn't win by 15-0, isn't it?
Yeah, and that but that works for both teams. Yeah. And I think England will be looking at it. And the worry, not the worry for me, but the I suppose the template has been laid for England to go, well, actually, if we get in and we defend a little bit like what Wales did, are a little bit sharper when we have the ball, we can be in a position where maybe it's 10-all going in at halftime. And that's the carrot for Borthwick and everything and all those. For Ireland, it is about going, okay, getting ready for this blitz defence, whatever is going to, what's going to come. But this is where you want to see Ireland switch back into that relentless, ruthless mentality mode that we know they're capable of, which we saw in Paris, or sorry, in Marseille in the opening week.
Yeah. And bear in mind, they had reasonable success against South Africa with a blitz line defence. It was funny, actually. We had Jack Nienaber a few weeks ago on a live event, and he said Ireland actually surprised them in attack. We might have to, you know, bring in a substitution for Gordon Darcy here. He's, I think, the hamstring is acting up a little bit there, Gordon.
I've just got a cramp. Oh, my God. Cycling yesterday.
It's tough work, this, talking about rugby. Really. It gets the legs going.
Well, I was getting ready for this Dotty Aid cycle. I was doing some miles yesterday, and now I've just got an absolute shocker of a cramp.
I dread the fact that this is a podcast and not a visual thing. That would have been an interesting visual to go up on later on. Right, let's finish up. I want to talk about the Italy. I mean, the width of a post away from beating France in Lille on Sunday. France, another card, another red card. Jonathan Danti seeing red just shy of half time. Gordon, Fabien Galthié, the French head coach, is under a lot of pressure, and it just seems like after the emotional low that was crashing out of the World Cup at the quarterfinal stage, their home World Cup, they just, I don't know what it is, France just seem to, they're not buying into this project anymore.
Yeah, and you can draw into what I was saying about Warren Gatland and how important a win is for him. They've kind of pulled, so Wales have pulled 40-minute performances in all of their games, but they haven't gotten a result. The value in his message will drop and drop as the wins stay further and further away. You look at, say, what's happened for France and Ireland, number one, number two, this 12 months ago, going into the World Cup, and you look at what's, everybody was like, will there be a fallout? What will happen? Ireland comes straight out of the blocks, lost an iconic player, a talismanic player. New 10 comes in and brings his own kind of identity and stamp to the game. And Ireland more or less pick up and go, okay, well, the New Zealand game, a 10-minute blip, but they're back and they're still buying into what the coach is saying. It does look like Galtier's words are falling on deaf ears at the moment.
Is there any parallels to this with
Ireland 2019?
The end of the Joe Schmidt era.
Of course there is.
There's a significant low. France's low was a World Cup. Ireland's low was losing to England in the first game of that Six Nations in 2019. And it's well noted, I think, at this stage that Galtier is quite an intense character. I think there were a few members of the coaching staff that were in place prior to the last World Cup almost to kind of mitigate against his more intense elements. I think some of those faces have gone, they've changed their backroom staff, and it's a case of, well, once that message, like you said, isn't leading to winning, all of a sudden it's very hard to get on board, which is, well, Ireland have done something differently now. The Fat Farrell's a very different character to Schmidt. He's probably a little bit less intense. It's a lot easier to be around him when you're losing, whereas perhaps these intense characters are...
The simple thing for me, Jerry, is selection. You're picking the halfbacks from Bordeaux. Yeah. Who are like almost exclusively attack based, and obviously they're not, but you've picked two halfbacks who are love to move the ball, and they play a very, very high tempo, fast paced game, very loose in structure. And you've picked them in a national team that kicked the ball more than anybody else in world rugby. So why are you picking those two players for that game plan? Either pick them and embrace the way that they are playing and change the game plan, evolve it and move to what they how they play, or pick two other players. And I think that to me seems to be a big issue with what France are doing.
They have a lot of issues at the moment. I mean, that performance in the Velodrome, I've been saying at this pod, they're damaged goods. This is their Six Nations campaign has now been derailed, and they should be 3 defeats from 3. They really should be. And I think Galtier's time is, I think his days are numbered now.
Will he last the tournament?
He'll just about, I'd say. I mean, he's going to contract for 4 years, so maybe he'll last longer. But I think they're, it's a damage management ticket now because three of the backroom staff have gone and been replaced. The replacements have not been very inspiring. I was talking to somebody in the French media last week who asked me about how the Irish squad had dealt with their World Cup hangover. And I said they came together on the Monday before the Six Nations started and they went did a debrief on entirely of the quarterfinal defeat by New Zealand. And it's hardly been mentioned, particularly since the first game against France. The quarterfinals against New Zealand, thankfully, I think I went through a whole week last week without mentioning the World Cup. I've just mentioned it now. But do you know what I mean? It's great. We've moved on. France haven't at all. It is still mentioned almost every week by players, by coaches, by Galtier, the defeat to South Africa in the quarterfinal. It's still bemoaned what went wrong that day, refereeing decisions that didn't go their way. They haven't moved.
Well, so the hangover,
yeah, of course. So the hangover has lingered, number one. The selection has been uninspiring, although in fairness to Gael Ficou, who was poor in the Velodrome, he's been outstanding in the two games since, so he was perhaps being written off by the French media too soon. But for me, like, you pick Maxime Lucu and Mathieu Jalibert and Damien Penaud and Biel Bierry on the left wing, four Bordeaux-Begla backs. You pick a bunch of Toulouse players who are playing fantastic rugby. Bordeaux-Begla players were playing fantastic rugby. Nolan Le Garec at scrum half and all the other players at Racing were top of the table playing very expansive rugby with Stuart Lancaster at Racing. And they come into France and they're playing a very restrictive band of rugby. It's two phases kick. Don't play any rugby in your own half. I said it before, that wonder try that Damien Penaud scored in the Viva last season was off script. That wasn't meant to happen. Galtier wasn't happy that they didn't kick the ball because they're in their own half and that's what they have to do. And the two tiny shreds of light in their performance, the two, what we call French flair that Galtier talks about in the Netflix documentary, but his teams don't play with because they're not let, was when Jalibert counted from inside his own half twice. I said the first time, do you remember the very first tackle of the game? When Hugo Keane does a great read on Penaud by the touchline.
On the left-hand side, yeah.
And then there was another counter-attack that lends up with Biel Bierry going up the left wing. But by and large, they don't play like that. They didn't play particularly well against Italy yesterday. And strictly by the laws, that last penalty by Garbisi should have been retaken because two French players can clearly move forward. And even the waterman coming on as well. Like, it was just a bit of shithousery by the French, didn't reflect well on them. And that penalty should have been retaken. And it's an awful shame that Italy didn't win because they would have deserved to win.
Retaken or otherwise, Gordon, you have to feel for Paolo Garbisi in that situation. The ball falls off. I mean, the roof is closed. There's no wind. There's no wind knocking that ball off the tee. But at the same time, it's just, of all the things to go wrong with the game on the line.
I'd say it's probably happened 5 times in his whole professional career where a ball's fallen off a tee. Desperately unlucky, but nobody's looking at him going, you missed that one. You know, the way they would do when other kickers rushed. He might have had another second or two to steady himself, but like he really had to kick it. I think Jerry's right. Referee, as soon as those guys went forward, you want the referee to go, hang on, no. Reset the clock. You can't come forward. You know, it should all be in the favour of him. But like, they don't get a win, but they get the moral win, draw against France. They take that.
If you saw Michele Lamoureux's face when he had to do that joint lift of what they call it the Garibaldi trophy. Michele Lamoureux's face when he's lifting that with Charles Olivon. I don't think he thought it was a moral victory.
Law 22 under scoring, which is I think law 8 in section 22, if the kicker indicates to the referee the intent to kick a goal, quote, the opposing team must stand still with their hands by their sides from the time the kicker starts to approach to kick until the ball is kicked. Move on to section 27. God, rugby. Anyway, if the opposing team infringes while the kick is being taken, but the kick at goal is successful, the goal stands and a further penalty is not awarded. If the kick is unsuccessful, the non-offending team is awarded a penalty 10 metres in front of the original mark. Like, it's black and white. The only thing, in fairness to the officials, I don't think the shot clock was designed with all this kind of stuff in mind. And it's a very big, brave TMO and referee who says to the home team, sorry, they're getting a second go at this 10 metres closer to the post. But them's the laws and Italy, we're done.
Poor old Italy. Right, well, after that forensic look at the laws, we'll leave it there for now. Myself and John O'Sullivan will be back on Thursday for another episode of The Counter-Ruck. My thanks to Jerry Thornley.
Cheers.
And of course, Gordon Darcy.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening. This is The Counter-Ruck, sponsored by Nikki Business. Be sure to leave a rating and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.